Hello and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes and this is the audio diary, occasional audio diary, it seems to be fair to say, for the 28th of July 2026, about coming up to 1 o'clock. And there's a little bit of wind, I hope it's not going to affect the microphone too much. Just come through the gates up onto the land. And I wanted to tell you about something which happened, I'm guessing in the night time. I don't really know when, but we came up to the land and discovered, I'm just walking there, a branch from a tree had semi-fallen. I'm just coming up to it through the stinging nettles here. This is one of our venerable oaks. And it's a beautiful oak, but however, a massive branch, several tonnage, has torn away from the main trunk. The branches have landed on the ground in a big tangle, which is very difficult to get to, chainsawing to get the sort of external branches so we could actually see what's going on off. There's a great cluster of it and it's sort of buried within some other trees. That's made it quite tricky to access. But the main weight of the branch, where it joins up to the tree, has torn and stripped a section of the bark and a section of the tree, not sufficient to damage the tree, I don't think, but certainly to cause it stress. And it stopped, it's about, I would say 12 feet from the ground, or maybe less, maybe 10 feet, I don't know, I don't want to stand underneath it. But some height, it stopped about 10 feet from there, stripping down part of the tree and the branch and the bark, because of an older branch that has fallen off, so it's kind of hit a knot, and because some of the tree is resting on the ground, it hasn't come down. It's tried to twist, and looking at the tree or this branch, there is another branch that's come halfway along the branch, which has fallen, or is in the process of falling, as it were, sort of frozen. This other branch is acting as a bit of an anchor, and one needs to really cut that. That would put the weight back onto the main branch again, and it's likely to finish the tear. However, that tearing motion may well damage the oak tree. So the other option I have is to get up a ladder or a platform and to chip away a little bit at the tear so that the strain where it stopped, we ease the pressure there, but at the same time it would increase the weight, so it would then probably just tear off and fall. The question is, in which direction is it going to fall? And you would hope it's not going to fall in the direction that the ladder and you with the chainsaw is on. And I don't like the idea of being up a ladder with a chainsaw anyway. So you probably want a long-handled chainsaw, which I may have to borrow or hire for the job, because you wouldn't want to be in close. So that's going to be interesting, but I'm going to leave that there because I want a couple of other pairs of eyes on it to give me some guidance. I'm all right with some of the trees that we've chopped down, but this is a great big oak. Right, anyway, that's the excitement. In the meantime, we have another, it's a cloudy day. I was hoping we'd get some rain. But we had rain the other day and it lasted for about 20 minutes. It did nothing, of course, and evaporated before it really hit the ground. So that was a bit of a shame. And I think everyone's screaming for rain. Of course, I have theories on this, which will not surprise these listeners, that, of course, the weather is being manipulated. My van is covered, when we had that rain, covered in very strange and mysterious particles. Because it's been on limp mode, it's not gone anywhere since the rain came down. And with it, it seems, when you look at it, there's a whole load of weird particles, some small, some like fibres. Now, I'm not sure where that would have come from in a normal, everyday, natural world. Somebody sent me an email. They had put a piece of plastic on their car, and after the rain and the water had evaporated, again, they had a similar thing of all these sort of different particles and strange fibres, and he collected them up, put a magnet on them, and they all stuck to the magnet. And he showed me a video of that. I haven't got a magnet. I have got magnets here, actually. I've got magnets in the van, haven't I? I remember that. So, it's locked. Where did I put the keys? Probably in my other pocket, which is in my jacket, which is hanging up somewhere. I will do that as a little test. I'm going to sit down on the chair here, just in the shade. This sun and old beating down weather is quite wearing, as you can imagine. It's useful in some respects because the nature that might be growing at a colossal rate isn't. I haven't had to cut the grass or get the strimmer out too often, although the brambles do seem to certainly not be affected, perhaps because their roots are much deeper. On the way here, went to the post office and posted out 5 books, which was nice. Thanks very much to those people, if you happen to be one of them, ordering a book. I don't have very many left, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to do another run. And so, therefore, when they're gone, they're gone. And I know that a number of people would have inquired about them or wanted them and perhaps never got round to them. And this is Biggleswick, of course, the town that wouldn't comply, which a lot of people have given me great feedback, which has been lovely. So that's nice. And I have been doing some writing in between stuff on the land, which has also been good. A friend of mine yesterday, Ed, dear old Ed, knew I was after a typewriter. And one came up close to where he lived, or where he was going. Actually, two came up. One near where he lived, and he showed me a picture of it. And one where, funnily enough, where he was making a delivery to. And that's right. And I looked at both and I said, well, I like the green one. That looks really good. So he said, yeah, okay, it's only £20. Now, I've seen these typewriters go for a considerable amount. Something like the one I've got may go for, I don't know, 60 or 70 quid. It does need a new ribbon, which I have ordered. Sorry about the wind. I'll just let that settle for a bit. Excuse me, yawning. That's better. I might have to get out of the wind in a minute because it's probably blowing on the microphone. This is a very sensitive microphone, this. I'll tell you what, I'll go in the wonky... I nearly called it a wardrobe then. Go in the wonky wardrobe, go in the wonky workshop. Can't go into the polytunnels, for they are far too heavy. Heavy? Well, they're far too hot. Heavy with the heat, I suppose is what I mean. Here we go. Get the sound effects at least. So what was I talking about? Oh, yes, it saw these typewriters. And so that was rather nice. So he went and got one, this green one, and brought it up yesterday over. We were here. And we had a look at it, and it was great. So thank you, Ed. I'm just going to fit a typewriter ribbon when it arrives, and then I should be able to actually do some writing. I have been doing some with my dad's portable typewriter, which is a bit smaller, and it's okay, but it doesn't do all the features that you might want it. It's a curious little thing, and it's been useful in the past. So, but I'm just trying to find the machine which is the most comfortable for me for my first drafts, particularly when I get onto a novel. I'm writing my pipe book, which isn't really a novel. It's sort of a light-hearted chit chat about pipes, me, and thoughts about smoking, I suppose. It's not a heavy book by any means. I have written a bit here. I've got here typed out. Let's have a look. I mean, this will give you an indication. It's first draft, so I've got to work on it. This section is called Rubber Ducks. One is never alone with a rubber duck. This is a quote from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, originally a radio series on the BBC, broadcast first in 1978. Later it became a series of books and then a TV programme, and after that a film. I've travelled a fair bit, but this is where it is a first draft, and there's sometimes the keys on the typewriter don't always come out. I need another ribbon for this one. I've travelled a fair bit, not so much to the other continents across the world, a little in Europe, America on a couple of road trips, but mostly in my own fine country, England, or as I prefer to call it, Britain. I have never packed in my suitcase a rubber duck, but I can imagine that you may have a modicum of company when stripped naked and immersed in a tub of water in the bathroom, say, of a fine hotel, with a friendly floating rubber duck. These days, the little fellows are made of cheap plastic and coloured unrealistically in bright yellow. So I'm not sure what level of conversation you'd get from that, but possibly one might agree with Mr. Adams that you are technically not alone. A pipe, on the other hand, is a far more superior ally to accompany you on foreign travel. So to bastardise Douglas's comic line, you're never alone with a briar pipe. Other materials are available. For me, when travelling around, the far easiest method of carrying the pipe is to stuff it into my jacket pocket, along with all the other paraphernalia. But some folk like to go to town with special bags, cases, rolls of leather, snapping boxes, and so forth. I suppose it all depends on where you're headed. A stroll to the newsagent, a meander to the beach, or a quick walk to your mistress in the dead of the night probably requires no more than requires no special carrying measures at all. The mouth works perfectly fine for that. The pipe, that is, not the lighter and tobacco, naturally. Anyway, it goes on. I don't want to bore you with my first draft, so it needs a lot of work. But the nice thing about a typewriter is it kind of forces you to not edit as you go and try and make it perfect. You're just getting the initial thoughts out, and then because you type double spaced, you've got places to sort of put corrections in or other thoughts. And then when you type it up properly, let's say onto the computer with your laptop or your computer keyboard, however you do it, you can make all those corrections, and then you can sort of edit it because you're in the editing mode. I think it is true that there are two modes a writer has. One is the creativity mode of sitting and just spewing out the stuff. And it doesn't matter how poorly it is written. And you don't think about that. You're thinking about the ideas or the contents, some sentence structure and, you know, that sort of thing. But mostly you're getting the ideas onto the page in some flowing order. And then afterwards, as you read it, you start to make the corrections and you go, oh, yes, I've used that word in the same sentence twice or very similar, or maybe I can make that a bit snappier. I don't really need that word there. There's too many of those words. And you can cut them out and make notes as you do, because you're then in your editing mode and then you type it up from your notes and the original script. And of course, then you're in your sort of final presentation mode. And the chances are then is that you hopefully will be picking up more of the spelling errors. That is, or grammar errors, because there's a lot of times when I've been typing here and I've typed a comma by mistake and I meant to type a full stop. And so sometimes I'll just put a full stop after the comma so I know that that's what I actually meant, because to blat out a comma or spend time with liquid paper or Tippex to do it, it's pointless if I just put a full stop. And I know that when I type it up, that's not what I'm going to write. I won't come to the end of the sentence and think, oh, there's a comma and then a full stop. I'll know that the comma was there by mistake. So there you go. Anyway, so I did bring the little typewriter and I've left it up here in the wonky workshop so that when one wants a break and a cup of coffee, one can just do a page or two of typing before you go back out into the excessive heat, although it does get hot in the shed here, so that doesn't help. And of course, I suppose it's drying up the typewriter ribbon in and of itself. I don't know whether you can just buy typewriter ink that you, I suppose, run the ribbon through so that you can save the ribbon, or whether you just constantly have to buy new ribbons. They all look very thin, and so that they run out of ink much quicker. And of course, the demand for them can't be great, so there's not a huge amount of choice. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. I think it's now extremely hot again. It's getting hot in the wonky workshop, and things are going to need watering. I've got some transplanting to do, and there's more clearance work to be done, but I can only really work in the shaded areas, because when you're doing that sort of level of manual work, it's just very, well, it's quite stressful really, I suppose, because the sun is, I don't know whether they're putting something in as well in the stuff they're spraying to make you feel more lethargic, but it's certainly having that effect on me. I probably need to be drinking more water with salt, get the sodium up into the body. It's probably what one needs. So I may go and find my water and take some salt with it. Anyway, thank you for listening. And I'm sorry about these being ad hoc after years and years and years of doing it very, very regularly. I know it must be frustrating, but it is what it is at the moment. We'll see how we get on. Just bear with me if you can. Until next time, goodbye.